Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings, everyone. This is Brian Reisman, host of Side Jams, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Please subscribe and follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And also know that it is now available as a video podcast on YouTube, starting with episode 56. It's video onward, but you can also listen to the audio portion right here. I hope you enjoy this latest episode. Hey everybody, this is Brian Reisman with Side Jams. In our episode today, welcoming singer, rapper, philosopher, and hockey fanatic, Matis Yahoo.
Hello, hello.
I see you've dyed your hair. It's sort of between purple and fuchsia. I'm not quite.
Yes.
Is it indigo? Violet?
Yeah, I've been dyeing it like every few days and just messing around with different colors.
That's interesting. That's cool. Yeah, but your hair was naturally dark before.
But my hair started going white when I was like 26.
My dad was premature gray. By the time he was 40, he was all gray, and I don't have a recollection of him before that.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't have to, I get to skip the bleaching process, and just my hair has no pigment, so I can have fun with it without having to get it bleached, which is kind of gross.
As long as you're having fun. I had a roommate freshman year at NYU, and he was a punk, and so he dyed his own hair. So occasionally it felt like he had multicolored roots at a certain point. He was blonde, but then he went black, then he went red, then he went something else. It was
different.
But I was just checking out your new album, the self-titled new release, which came out a couple weeks ago.
Thank you.
At this point, and it's interesting because it's there's a lot of atmospheric tunes on it. I mean, you're known for mixing up, you know, obviously reggae and hip hop and pop, and this one seems very contemplative. And I know that you were married again recently, like 3 years ago, and you have two children.
Yep.
With your wife, and it seems like this is an album sort of both about celebrating the sort of, I think, the soulmate in your life, but also again with a lot of the themes in your albums of sort of tracing your continual evolution as a human being.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think as the years have gone on, my lyric writing has become a little less idealistic and more realistic or about my real life experiences, even though a lot of the kids today, they really write extremely literally. That's kind of the thing right now. But for me, it's still using lots of metaphors. Like my sons are downstairs right now recording music with another young artist. And they're writing, I'm listening in on their writing sessions and stuff. And it's so interesting because like, I feel like such an old man because of like, I use metaphors and all these like these kids, they talk about exactly what it is that they're, you know, talking about. But yeah, there's a lot of personal, the music became more personal over the years, I would say. And less about ideas. And this record definitely continues that. And I think that musically, this record kind of leaves a lot of space for the vocals. And that's something that a lot of people are kind of saying, like, that they are really hearing the lyric and coming back to the lyric, which I think no matter what genre that I'm dipping into or blending, the lyric is always kind of the central thing that makes it, like, I guess Matis Yahoo, one of the things. And certainly the fans, the core fans, they come back to that. So they seem to be pretty happy with the album, though it is pretty meditative.
Well, but you know, the opening track, you say you're not regular, you're not secular. I mean, obviously, there are some fans who followed you all the way through. The first thing I think of is this movie.
Oh, hell yeah. Nice. Sam Raimi.
I like this. I like when I saw it, I was like, I dig this. It's like when I didn't, you know, I watched the last Bill and Ted movie and Kid Cudi was in there. And I didn't know much about him. And I was like, oh, that was a great performance.
Yeah.
Cudi shows up at the end like it's just, what?
Yeah, Kid Cudi does a lot of acting. It's kind of cool that he pops in. He pops in all the time in movies. You're like, whoa. This was like really cool experience for me to be in a horror movie. And
a Jewish horror movie, though, because it's usually Christian stuff. And this wasn't the Golem either. This was like the Dybbuk box.
Yeah. This was the first like Jewish poltergeist story, at least that we know of. It was pretty scary. It's pretty scary.
Was it you had a good time on set?
Yeah, it was awesome. I filmed it, I think, in like it was somewhere around the time that I was going to Vancouver for the Olympics for the one day stuff. And it was shot in Vancouver. So I remember like around that year, I was like, it was like my second home. I was spending a lot of time up there.
Yeah, no, I mean, the new album, there's a lot of, I think my favorite track actually on the new album is Rain Dance, which is at the end, which I believe was inspired by a wilderness therapy session that you did, getting back to nature. And you felt that was a transformative experience. And it feels like that when you listen to it. It's very dreamy, very meditative.
Thank you. Yeah, that's so cool that that's your favorite song. It's probably my favorite song on the album, too. It's really a powerful one.
A lot of you've talked about feeling isolated, and yet you always have this uplifting message in your music, and you also, there's a lot of peace, love, and understanding. At the same time, you're a big hockey fan, and people associate that oftentimes with violence and and anger. And I'm kind of curious, you started playing hockey as a kid. It goes way back.
Yeah, I started when I was a little kid, when I was like, started skating when I was maybe 8 years old, and playing hockey for the Plainsmen and White Plains when I was 9. And then I played a bit in high school and eventually kind of got more into music, but I've always had a love for it. And when I lived in LA, my kids were getting involved in baseball, and I was not a fan. I'm not a fan of baseball. I was never a fan of watching baseball, unfortunately.
But it can be boring to watch.
I hit up Luke Robitaille and we got some tickets to the Kings game. We went right against the boards, and my two boys fell in love with the sport and played hockey ever since, all three of my boys. And so I love it. I love, especially like since COVID started, like having the TV on during hockey season and watching the games, going to the games. Like my boys are, one of them is a hardcore Kings fan, even though I'm from New York and we live in New York, in New Jersey. Course. But they won two Stanley Cups during the 4 years that we were living in LA. So they're pretty, pretty big Kings fans.
It's cool. Well, and of course, being a New Yorker, Islanders, Rangers.
Yeah, I've always been a Rangers fan, but I really started watching the Islanders a lot last season. They had a great team last season. And so I like all the New York teams, and even the Devils. Now I'm living in New Jersey, so.
Oh, right on. So, like, do you find a difference, especially with the New York teams, a big difference in terms of the way they approach things?
On the New York team?
Just in how they play. You know, I've never been a huge sports fan. A friend of mine is like a big art fan and sports fan, and you see a lot of analysis. And people who aren't hardcore sports fans probably sit there and roll their eyes, like, "What does this all mean?" You find a difference in terms of their strategies and the way they've approached things over the years?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, it is fun. It's fun to watch teams build, and that's been fun watching like the Islanders and the Rangers and the Devils in their process of building these teams that are really, really great. And then watching when a team gets hot and how they kind of like how they just going from game to game. So it's fun. I like watching sports. You know, there was a time when I was when I was like way more into studying all the time. And as I've gotten older, I kind of feel like, you know, there's something to be said for like watching a game and just relaxing. And also because of my involvement with my boys, you know, so it's fun.
Well, so it's also of all the sports out there, it's the most fast paced.
Yeah.
I mean, people are whizzing around on the ice. So it's like, I can't imagine it's super relaxing because you start getting pumped up. Seems like hockey fans really get into it.
Yeah. You always like, you can hear like the whistles blowing, you know, there's some kind of scuffle in front of the net wherever I am in the kitchen or whatever. I always turn around, what's going on? So yeah, it's a fun game. It's so fast paced. It's so beautiful and graceful, and it's so hard hitting and violent at the same time. So, I mean, it's a beautiful combination of things. I don't think there's any sport like it.
Is it therapeutic for you to get on the ice and kind of slam into people and do that?
Oh, not at all. Not anymore. I mean, now when I get on the ice, it's like, you know, it's like 2-3 minutes and then I'm tired. I have no stamina and I don't have those muscles anymore. But when I was a kid, it was really therapeutic. I mean, I have memories of we were on an outdoor rink and, you know, the sun coming up, you know, at those early morning practices. And my dad standing on the bleachers with his coffee, you know, cup, and the steam rising up from that. And I loved being on the ice. I loved skating, and I loved hitting. And it was such a great feeling to hit people.
Coming from such a guy with this peaceful message in his music, and you're like, yeah.
Well, you know, it's like people are complex, and you know, you can sing about peace and hope for that, and you can treat people in a peaceful way. It doesn't mean that you're not gonna like ice hockey. And I think it's funny, like a lot of times people think one person has to be a one way the whole way. That's so boring, you know?
Well, that's in a lot of your music. Like, you're not defined in any one way. And there's some people that are. I mean, like in that song Lonely Day on the new album, it's clear that you had an epiphany early on, whereas a lot of your peers were trying to conform and you weren't. You kind of went the other way. And I relate to that because as a kid, I was like the honor student, like heavy metal, horror movies, comic books, Godzilla movies, like a lot of stuff that people thought was stupid. You know, right. And I was getting really high marks, but I just like these kind of just dark and weird things to other people.
Right.
Or just fantasy. And I was reading too, actually, you worked on a ski mountain in Bend, Oregon at one point, but how old were you at that time?
I was 18, 19. I worked at Mount Bachelor in Bend, Oregon. It's a great mountain. I worked on the Rainbow Chairlift, which is like the old school heavy steel chairlifts that you had to slow down or else it would like knock somebody out. And but yeah, it was a great time. It was such a nice time in my life because I was away from New York in a pretty small town at the time. Bend was still a pretty small town. And it was great for me because I did like community theater there. I got the lead role in the Equus play. I played the boy. And I did, they had open mic night at coffee shops that were like, you know, small enough that I felt confident to go in there and start performing. And then they eventually gave me my own night. The place was called Cafe Paradiso. And I had videotapes of me and guy, you know, doing these improvisational jams and stuff. And I had bought a motorcycle. There were the lakes in the summertime. You'd drive up to the mountains and go swimming. I mean, I think I was living in a garage and I had putting my first band together. And playing local shows and stuff. And I was like 18, 19. It was like a really cool time in my life. And then
lived up there for a couple of years?
Yeah, I was there for 2 years. Yeah.
And then, so now what was the early band like?
The name was Soul for I. And then we had a duo called the Mystical Truth. And I was MC Truth and there was MC Mystic. And we were just a bunch of couple of, it was like, did you ever see like Granola Funk? Like, I don't know, like on Fish Tour, there were like hippies that were like beatboxing and rapping. And it was like that kind of thing. It was like crunchy kind of, but it was the original like seeds of what was to become Matas Yahoo, because I was starting to figure out like where my identity played in and what was important to me. And I was getting a lot of time performing in front of people, getting comfortable being like on a stage.
And you did snowboarding up there too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I think you got hurt at one point.
Oh,
probably doing some tricks or.
I got hurt. I broke my collarbone skiing when I was 16, and that was the end of my skiing because it was with a pole. So after that, I said, you know, snowboarding for me, please.
So from snowboarding to Rabbi Exorcist. I mean, that's kind of
it's been quite a life, I have to say.
It is. It's clever. And also, I was reading because I found this old old Entertainment Weekly story that you loved playing sports growing up, but then you got a reputation for being a stoner.
Yeah,
it's like got you booted off the team, or how did that work?
Pretty much, you know, my love was ice hockey, and I wanted to be really focused, determined hockey player. And And I just kind of string of bad luck. You know, one season I broke my collarbone. I was out, you know, with the I kind of wasn't really ready to probably, like, when I was that young, you know, in middle school, ready to step up and be on a varsity team, which was what I was sort of was the goal, what it was looking like. I had to make a choice. Mm. And I ended up playing JV, and it was less competitive and it was less of a push, and I didn't really push myself. And that's when I started smoking weed and, like, listening to music. And when I did it, it was very much like prevalent. It was very obvious. I became kind of a hippie, and definitely I don't think the coach was interested in having me on the team. You know, I had these huge dreadlocks and, you know, would wear sandals to school in February. I was definitely on my own trip, you know.
You think it was just part of the image, or is it really hard to get the dreadlocks under the helmet?
No, I have videos of, I had flames on the side of the helmet and dreadlocks coming down, and I'm 6'4". So on skates, that's like, I'm like 6'8". It was a sight to see. It was quite a sight to see.
Actually, do you have, like, photos and videos from that era?
I do. Yeah, I do. I have the White Plains High School, you know, varsity hockey picture with me with the dreadlocks. It's pretty cool.
And watching your sons get into hockey, you're obviously reliving those times, but have you, is there anything, any wisdom you can pass on to them about the sport that you learned?
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, you know, I do it with hockey. I do it with music with my older boys who are now recording music. And I do it, like, with just life stuff all the time. You know, it's like kids need, like, at least I find you need to have conversations with them about your experiences. It's really important that you share, I think, as a parent, your personal experiences. And a lot of parents just shy away from that, and they feel like they have to guard their children from themselves. Yeah. And I'm very much like, I believe that, like, we have experiences. Kids are really smart. They know, like, what you know, when parents are lying to them and when they're not. And, like, that whole trust thing is so important, and they feel like, you know, there isn't, like, you know, like, it's all right there. So, yeah, for sure. I talk to them all the time. My number one lesson I had to learn for myself in the hockey rinks is the temper, because, you know, when you're watching hockey and you watch the hockey parents and they start losing their minds, you know. But when you see your kid get, like, you know, smashed, like, illegally or something like that, you know, it's really easy to lose it. So after a couple of years of watching them, I finally learned how to come watch the games and just realize, okay, this is children's hockey. We can just relax and enjoy the game. But yeah, I'm always trying to give them advice on stuff.
Well, we'll see with your young son and daughter now too, to see if they follow in those footsteps
and see
what that happens. And you'll have more wisdom at that point, hopefully.
Yeah, let's hope.
Well, I remember I played Little League for 3 seasons, you know, speaking of baseball, like we're talking about earlier. And I remember once after a game, we'd beaten this other team, and this kid said, "Oh, you guys are a bunch of cheaters," you know. And my friend's dad got really pissed off, said, "Hey," and he came over and he gave him a lecture about sportsmanship.
Yeah.
And these days, I feel like we have a problem with sportsmanship in some cases society now. And on top of that, you can't say anything to anybody else's kid, even if they've actually done something bad that, you know, you can talk to someone else and say, "That's not a good idea."
Yeah.
You know, don't light that thing on fire.
Yeah. No, I think it's totally fine to do that. I've had actually, like, times where I've started giving speeches and other parents have come over and been like, "Wow, like, that was really cool. Like, that, kids need to hear that stuff." Stuff about just, like, making eye contact with the people at the rink and shaking people's hands and saying hello and being like human beings. You know what I mean?
We live in a weird digital world now.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's like, and that's what's interesting about, you know, rain dancing. We have this world that we're more connected and we're more disconnected at the same time. You know, it was interesting. I just read that you had played a benefit for Ukraine last month at City Winery. And I believe your great grandmother was Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. From Odessa.
So you have a connection to that too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes me think of the video for Jerusalem, because you had that people putting up photos up on that wall of light. And in some cases, you automatically think of a memorial, given a tragedy. But it was an interesting mixture of how you were showing all the diverse types of people we have in the world, and at the same time, empathizing with the pain of different groups.
Absolutely.
It was an interesting juxtaposition that you had there.
Oh, thank you.
And as I was thinking also, you know, you combined religion and hockey together in the miracle video.
Yeah.
So, but you have that Roman emperor who, like, imprisons you and this black gladiator in a cage, and you guys get out, and he sends his hockey minions after you.
Yeah, that was. I've had a couple of video treatments that I wrote, and that was one of them. And it was like, I had very specific things that I wanted. I wanted Modest Yahoo icecapades on LSD, basically. And and I was like, it has to include the Youngblood scene, you know, where the guy does the skates. You know the movie Youngblood? I don't know
if you heard
with Rob Lowe. I'm like, I want a Youngblood scene. We need a Zamboni in the video. OG, it's such a cool video. I love that to this day. It's such a fun video. But yeah, it's all about like, she's like, in my life, different interesting things coming together. And like, to me, that's what's beautiful. I mean, you take like being Hasidic and then reggae music, those two things which seemingly are so, so separate. And then you find this link, this like real authentic place where you can combine them. I think my father once told me about this time when I ride motorcycles, Harley also. And yeah. me and my dad were on a little motorcycle trip, and we were at some motel somewhere, and it was all lined with motorcycles. You know, everyone was sleeping there along the road, and everyone was like revving up their engines in the morning, and you hear like these Harleys. And over the top of the Harleys, I had started hanging out with these Hasidim that pray really, really loud. Like they scream. It's like screaming at God, basically. And I was praying that way. And so you could hear all the Harleys, and then you could hear over the top of it, Shema Israel, you know, like, and he thought it was one of the coolest. He's atheist, but he thought it was one of the coolest, you know, religious moments he ever saw.
Sounds kind of metal, actually.
Yeah.
Well, so you've been riding motorcycles your whole adult life, or did you start when you were a teenager?
Yeah, well, I think when I was about 18, I got my first bike. Yeah.
What was your first bike?
My first bike was a Yamaha Seika, which was like it was like an 82. So it had this huge gray fairing on the front that was like super heavy and made it sort of difficult to maneuver. But yeah, that was the first bike. My second bike I got when I moved back to New York City in a famous bike shop in Williamsburg, no longer there, a guy named Slick that used to sell Japanese bikes right in now where there's skyscrapers in Williamsburg. Yeah. But and that bike I sold back to him, and you know who bought it, ended up buying that bike, was one of the members of The Office. One of the well-known comedians. And we have a joint friend, and he took a picture of himself on the bike. He said, "Look, I have Modest's bike now." So that was the guy who plays Andy on The Office.
It was Ed Helms.
Ed Helms. Yeah. Ed Helms. Ed Helms has, it's like a yellow motorcycle. Like it looks like the motorcycle from like the original Jimmy Cliff, Harder They Fall, you know, that it's pretty cool. And then the next bike I had, I bought my father's Harley off of him, and he bought himself a new bike, and that was a great bike. And we went on a road trip together, and I was starting to make some money, and the clutch went out, and I was like, you know, like I couldn't stop the bike or else I couldn't start it. So I was going through like traffic lights, you know, trying to get to this Harley dealership. And I ended up buying a new bike at that dealership because they couldn't replace the clutch, and I didn't want to end the trip. And then over time, I've had different bikes. The one I have now is a Shovelhead that was built for me by a good friend of mine from my time back in Oregon. Yeah.
What was the most fun ride you ever took?
Most fun ride. I was just my dad was here a couple of days ago, and we were talking about like trips that we've taken together, and we were talking about all the crazy experiences we've had. Like we had a lot of fun, but the moments that we remember are when you're like, you know, riding behind a semi on the highway to shield the rain, going 80 miles an hour, or like we've had these crazy experiences where it's beautiful, and then you go up to the mountains and there's snow all over the road. Yeah, there's been a few.
The thing with semis, you have to be careful because like they can't see you. I remember once I almost got run off the road in Connecticut because I was kind of going up this mountainside, and
there's a lane, you know, they have that really quick lane merge. And it's like, I just swerved and got between him and the car behind him.
Oh, cool. You know? Wow. It's nuts. And
with cars, I imagine with bikes, it's actually very tricky.
Yeah. My first trip that I took, my first gig that I ever had, like where I got paid money for doing music, it was like through the Detroit Auto Show and Volkswagen. And I performed at the Detroit Auto Show while I was in college, before I was Matas Yahoo, or before I had really become religious in any way. Yeah. And I took that money. I bought myself a little Kawasaki and I drove that from New York to Minneapolis because it was like I had a friend who was a producer there who would help me make a demo. And it was like, you know, today it's like everyone's can make a demo like in their living room with the most basic stuff. But then it was like, okay, I've got a friend, and I took this journey and I decided to go like what I thought were back roads through Canada. It was the most ridiculous way of going. That was an insane trip. But
speaking of dangerous, did you ever have any big hockey injuries?
Yeah, I tore my ACL. I like kind of totally, and my MCL, like my whole meniscus, my knee. Yeah. I was playing like men's league hockey at Chelsea Piers. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was in my mid 30s or early 30s or something. And I just felt someone fell on top of me and just, psh. Yeah.
Have you ever played like street hockey or deck hockey?
Street hockey, yeah. Like roller hockey growing up as a kid and stuff, like on rollerblades, for sure.
And how is that different? I mean, obviously it's you're still gliding across the surface, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, it's a different motion. I think it's gotten closer and closer over the years. The materials have gotten like better, but basically you're talking about rubber on pavement versus metal on ice. So the whole feel is a completely different feel, but it is generally the same idea. You know, and for kids like, you know, growing up in New York and stuff, like we all have access to rinks all the time or even like programs all the time. So street hockey and roller hockey is like a huge part of it all.
Like composite sticks or wooden sticks?
Oh, composite. Yeah, I don't think wooden sticks anymore. I don't think they use them anymore.
Is this sturdier in general?
I think they use for street hockey, they use the composite. I don't know if they use wood sticks. But the sticks now are so light, it's insane. They're crazy. Crazy light.
In the past, when you were on tour, did you actually go skating or play hockey while you were on tour?
I'm gonna have to get you some pictures of that too. Like I would set up the hockey nets, we would play roller hockey. We went so far as to have a custom trailer built with a whole thing for a motorcycle to like ramp the motorcycle in. So I had my Harley out on the road with me for years and years, you know, while I was touring and stuff too.
That's cool. And then as hockey as well, like you would play.
Oh yeah. Like I would play with my sons, cause I had my sons out on tour with me all the time as well. And I would have the hockey nets set up every day. The rollerblades would be out and the sticks, and we would just be shooting around wherever the tour bus was parked up, whether it was a parking lot in like a big amphitheater or whether we were like on some side street in Pittsburgh, you know, we would find places to take slap shots and stuff.
Would your manager be like, no, 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 you can't do that on tour?
No, I mean, yeah, usually there was a tour manager at some point that was like, what are you guys doing? You know,
it's a little tricky. Well, at least, you know, it's good. I mean, it sounds like you just try to have a well-rounded life. I mean, it's important, I think, to have other things. I mean, I've had people tell me, I was talking with Ben from Asking Alexandria, and he said in the beginning of the pandemic, he learned how to cook because he realized his hobby became, his passion became his career.
Oh, wow.
I feel that as a writer, like, you know, all the things I love became my career. So what do I do outside of that?
Yeah.
To find the thing. Do you, I guess it's a good refuge for you also because of all the stuff you're doing.
It's totally true. It's totally true what you're saying. It's when your main passion, your main hobby becomes your, not only your way of making finances, it becomes your whole entire life, you know, and it's an incredible blessing. That's what everybody wants, to be able to be surrounded by doing the thing they love all the time. But it's also, there's a side of it that a lot of people don't know about or don't talk about. And it takes that away from you. Yeah. And then you become kind of like, you find these other little hobbies, these little things that make your life complete. And those are the things that kind of make you part of the things that make your life complete, you know? for sure.
But, you know, I had a couple other quick hockey questions, which was, well, first of all, favorite team?
Favorite team is the Rangers, New York Rangers.
And who think is going to win the Stanley Cup this year?
The New York Rangers are going to win the Stanley Cup this year. There's no question. They're actually doing really well. I think we have a shot at it.
Is there any one position that you tended to play?
I played everything. I played left wing mainly. I'm a lefty, and I played center a little bit. But I really love defense, and I played defense and for a couple of years. And it's just such a fun position. I have a certain appreciation for that position.
What's the hardest position to play, you think?
Well, that's tough. That's a tough one. I don't know if you can say. It's hard being on the ice. Five guys on the ice, you know what I mean? Rotating all the time. So everyone's getting fresh legs. It's not like in basketball where you have like your starting five or whatever is pretty much in, yeah, in for the game. It's such a team sport. You know, and there's also a culture of humility that you find in the sport, which you don't find in a lot of sports today. But there's a culture of team mentality, you know. So I appreciate that as well. I like that.
Which is interesting, given that it can be one of the more violent sports.
Yeah.
With some people.
Yeah. The thing with the violence is this. Like, in some sports, you might see like a fight start to happen. It's so out of the box and it's so abnormal for the sport, and you know that it's just like, well, what is this? You know, this is just rage. This is just, but you have to remember with hockey that these guys are so tough. You know, they're getting like punched in the face, hit with hockey pucks and stuff, and bouncing back. It's just part of the thing. And then there's this whole culture to like protecting your players on the ice and not, you know, being intimidated and not, and that's all part of the understanding and the mentality that everyone who's playing hockey and a lot of the hockey people that are watching hockey have. So when there's a fight, you know, it's not like that, the end of the world. First of all, rarely is anyone getting injured. I mean, it happens, but it's not serious injuries. And then you'll see the guys like laughing about it as they're on their way to the penalty box, you know, with each other, the guys they just fought, you know, and it's, yeah, sort of a part, it's just a part of the thing. It's not so crazy, really.
How did that prepare you for life on the road? The life of a rock star. dealing with hecklers and dealing with weird situations and everything. Like,
well, when it comes to that, like, I don't think that hockey prepared me for that. I'm a pretty sensitive type, and where I really got prepared, well, not prepared, but where I learned how to grow thick skin was my time in Crown Heights in Brooklyn in the religious community. Because in that community, there's no boundaries whatsoever, you know, and it's very in your face and everything is very crowded. And I was kind of living in that community. So people will say whatever they want to you. They'll ask you for whatever they want. There's no sense of, is this a good time or a bad time, or maybe we shouldn't come to his house or have, call him on his cell phone. Or, there's no limitations at all. So that was kind of where I guess the place where I had to learn as I started touring, and you know, I had to learn how to be a little less sensitive and when it comes to people and the way people are, you know, and that, you know, just this is the way people are, you know.
Yeah. Is there any big life lesson that you've learned that you can impart to younger people after this kind of wild ride you've been on so far?
Yeah, there's so many lessons, and I'm learning them every day and trying to teach them to my kids every day. Where to start? Where do you start? Where do you start with that? You know, I guess the main thing is, I guess one thing like I was talking with my younger son is about, like, recently is about like action. And sometimes like certain people, like we have like a lot of hunger and a lot of desire and big dreams, you know, yeah. And like, you know, it has to start with you, basically like working at something and becoming good at it, you know, and it's like very basic, but like, so for some people, it's the life is all out here and it's not like in here in the details of doing. And, yeah, that was a lesson that has taken me a long time to learn. And one that I was recently trying to impart onto my 11-year-old, you know, that it doesn't matter so much what people think at the end of the day, or who thinks what, or who you convince of what. But at the end of the day, you know, your security comes from your sense of what you actually do, what you actually are able to do. And that takes work, and it's tedious and a step at a time, that type of thing.
Work in progress.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, Mattis, thank you again. It was a great chat. Hopefully we'll chat again at some point soon.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.